Welcome to our podcast,
Band BFFs,
the podcast where we make your music selection less complicated.
On today's episode, we're going to be discussing A Walk in the Morning Sun by Pierre LaPlante. Cheers to starting the conversation. Well, everybody, sorry this episode is a little bit late coming out. It has been quite a band-cember, if you will.
It has been pretty busy. We went to school all the way up until the 20th yes. of December. Had to make sure all your Christmas shopping was done by the time you got out of school. That was stressful.
Very stressful.
Very stressful. Fortunately, I did like 98% of mine online.
Yeah, I know. Why don't you tell everybody about that text that you sent? Ridiculous.
So, my husband and I, who's also a band director, we both had concerts on the same night, and my son was going to a GDYO concert in downtown Dallas, and so I was coming home from my concert thinking, I'm going to have a nice, you know, relaxing evening. I got home first. I'm going to change in my PJs, get into bed early. I went outside to check the mail and stacked up outside my
literally like 30 boxes.
Everything got delivered all on the same
and
day.
And nobody stole anything. So like Which that's I, like a
I
big
really
deal.
That was a big deal. I was really thankful for the neighborhood that we live in, but I did not have a relaxing evening. Yeah. I got to sit there and wrap all of those gifts. But then it was done. Yeah. Then it was done. Yes.
But it's been busy. So sorry for the delay. But we're very excited to talk to you today about A Walk in the Morning Sun, which is one of my personal favorite Texas PML grade threes.
So this piece sounds exactly like what the title indicates. It is a nod. LaPlante talks about in his program notes that this is a nod to Leroy Anderson and all of that fun kind of music that he is known for writing. This is in 2/4 time. It's about 3 minutes in length. It's in the key of E flat to start. It goes to A flat and then comes back to the key of E flat. So there are some key considerations in this, and 2/4 throughout. Percussion considerations. There's not a whole lot of percussion going on. You need a minimum of, I would say, 5 players. The timpani part is real light.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you had to do without the timpani part, it's not going to hurt the music to do without timpani. Everything else you really need in the percussion section. Split parts and clarinet. 3 parts, 3 trumpet parts, 4 horn parts, though often they're doubling. The first and second horn are doubling, third and fourth horn are doubling. 2 trombone parts plus a bass trombone part.
Yeah,
so this really
different.
Is instrumentation wise, it's kind of old school.
Yeah. And a piccolo part.
Yes.
Yeah. But this piece is super fun. I think the piccolo part's actually very important. It kind of adds to that walking in the morning sun feel. It starts off with bassoon, clarinet, and then cues in bass, clarinet, and euphonium in case you don't have a bassoon. But it's real jaunty like Leroy mm-hmm. Anderson, so it just sounds like somebody's stepping out for a walk in the morning sun. And it's a bassoon and clarinet player, little soli. They have a fermata, and then the piece starts off on measure 4 with like the 1 and 2. It's got like a real jaunty style, and that kind of continues through the whole piece. So like we've got a lot of the what I call oompa parts.
Real playful.
Of course, in like horn a lot of the time, sometimes in trombone later on. So it's very playful. The tuba part's pretty important for like a walking bass line mm-hmm. along with bass clarinet a lot of the time. So you just have to kind of have everybody's got their own little moment in the sun, if you will. And so I think that it's just good, a great all around piece to play.
And euphonium does not double what's happening in the trombone
right.
part. Like it is often its own little line. So that's something to keep in mind.
So the piece is at a nice little walking tempo, about 100, 110. As I mentioned, the whole like jaunty part starts at measure 4 and with the woodwinds kind of starting off with the little style alto sax kind of leads it into measure 9. Then we have the oompa part starting with tuba, bass, clarinet, as I mentioned, with the pause being horn and clarinet here at the beginning. And then at 11, we get our first moment of melody that happens in flute and oboe and clarinet. And then there's a a secondary counter melody and tenor sax and euphonium only, which is just kind of like blowing in the wind, like half notes, and it's just kind of moving on. But it's got just this cutesy little melody.
It's very catchy.
Yeah. And articulation is very important because it does change a lot. So maybe taking all the slurs out to begin with when your kids are first learning it to make sure that they just have the rhythm. It does have 16th notes in it, one and a two, and often. So I think that just getting that taken out and then later on adding in the slurs to make sure that they're not compressing their fingers is a great technique for learning.
Definitely.
At 17, the lows get their first little moment of one and two. It's like this little syncopated moment that comes back and over and over and over. Mm-hmm. When I played this piece, I taught the kids to like put a little bit of like a hairline of space between the dotted quarter note and then the tied eighth note to the quarter note to the next quarter note, just to make it sound a little bit more jaunty and light in style.
And firm articulation on the front of that note too.
At 19, we can kind of continue, but now the piccolo adds in with the same people having the melody, same counter melody in the euphonium and tenor sax line. Often the brass just kind of acts as like a background track. Like it's like just coming in and little pops of color.
And first trumpet is really taking the lead in the brass section. Second and third trumpet are often not doubling what's happening in first trumpet.
Right.
They're more
like the
playing.
Horn,
yeah, they're
something.
More playing that harmonic function instead of less a melodic function in the trumpet part.
And the first trumpet adds in four measures later at 23 on the melody and immediately coming in on an upper D, going straight away to an upper F. So the first trumpet part is a little bit higher in range on this piece. But it adds to that little jaunty feel like you're walking in the sun.
Little pops of xylophone in here as well when we get to like measure 27. So woodwinds are playing and then xylophone and some of the brass are kind of hitting in those rests. One and boom, and one and boom.
Which makes me think of Leroy Anderson.
Definitely.
Yeah. It's kind of like a little sleigh ride-esque feel. Saxophone gets a little moment of glory, adding in with the flutes. And then we're back to kind of the melody part at 34. This time the trumpets get to have a little moment. And then oboe, flute take over. It's like a little echo.
Passing through
yeah,
the
it's
ensemble.
It's almost like two people are walking along the path and, you know, they're just conversing throughout.
I feel like the trombones in this, like you want to have pretty decent trombones. The trombones are almost like playing the role of a horn a lot of times through this. So they're split into thirds or fourths. So tuning is going to be really important in that low brass. The tuba and euphonium are doing something completely different.
Yeah. And the bass trombone part a lot
and
of the
bass
time.
That's right.
The
that's
bass
right.
trombone kind of goes back and forth. Sometimes it's with trombone. Sometimes it's with euphonium, tuba. So, yeah, you got to have pretty solid trombones that are okay, like, doing their own thing.
And when in my low brass, when they have something similar to this, we will do a lot of on longer valued notes. Like, if it's written, like in this case, it's written as eighth notes often. So we'll play it as hold the note out for a half note value and really sit on that tonality. Hear what it sounds like. Adjust for intonation. Make everything a lot longer than it should be. Kind of like taking the slur away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're talking about technique and some of the upper woodwinds. So really letting them hear what that tonality is supposed to be so that when you go back and put it on the rhythm, you get those chord sounds in short bursts.
Right.
And it's not just tongue.
Yes, absolutely. And that's really important when it's like in fifths like it is here. Then the trumpets kind of take over the melody again, passing back and forth. Piccolo gets to talk this time with clarinet one. It's just kind of passing its way through 44. The trumpets, all of the trumpets have the melody, 1, 2, and 3, and they are not in parts here. This is just melodic feature. And then flute, piccolo, and oboe get this cute little counter melody. Ta-da, da-da-da-da. They're just doing like a cute little grace note. Trumpets continue with the melody. And then at 56, we get up into the melody here with first trumpet, piccolo and flute, and piccolo and flute are in the same range. Like, so as in, tuning. Not the same range, but they're playing the same notes, which means piccolo is an octave above.
Right.
And so tuning is kind of crazy down here, so you really have to make sure.
And doubling the first trumpet, which is in a higher tessitura, too.
Right, right. It's like, it's a lot. And even the clarinet part is up at the top of the staff, not above the staff, but still, there's a lot going on at 56 tuning-wise that you want to make sure you got your tuners and you're really making that be a big thing. Every time that we get, this is like a big tootie moment here, and then we're getting softer and softer, taking parts out. So at 60, we've thinned out to just the trumpet playing with the bassoon again, kind of like beginning when it was bassoon and clarinet. Now it's trumpet. They're having a moment. Then we change key and we add a flat, kind of like a march. And now we've got like the trio, like a march, even though it's not march like at all, but there's like the flute and the clarinet have the melody. It's now very slurry.
This is where the walk gets a little lazier. Start meandering off the path a little bit.
They're picking a rose and they're smelling it or whatever.
And,
right.
And like, just like lots of woodwinds here. So your brass are getting, you know, there's some horn accompaniment, but brass are basically getting to sit there
like
and take a
woodwind quintet.
Break.
Exactly. Yeah. So clarinet and flute have the melody. Oboe will have little pops of coming in on the melody. The tenor sax gets to come in eventually. There are cues in the low brass in case you don't have some of these low reed parts like tenor sax, bassoon. But it is just woodwinds for a long time.
And I really think this section shines. It's pretty. You can do it with just woodwinds. That woodwind color is just so nice.
Yep. At 80, we add in the chords in the brass again, but they're just there for chordal function. They're just getting stronger and softer, just like background music to the woodwinds. They're still shining. We've also added trumpet one on the melody. And again, this is way more slurry than it was before. Before it was jaunty and stylistic. Now it's just all very slurred phrases, and you want it to sound that way, like
That's
a trio in a march. Like you want it to be... not everybody breathing at the same time. Talk
more
about
connected,
where to take breaths.
Follow through.
Yeah. Euphonium and tenor sax get this cool moment at 86 where they kind of take over and they add in some horn and such as we're building up to 88. 88 is a big focal point moment where everybody's playing. It's like the part in the walk where they've got
kind of arrived,
kind of seen their destination. Yeah. And then it's getting softer and softer. And we're kind of all dying down again. Horn is still important with trumpet one and upper woodwinds here with euphonium a little bit. Then we kind of die down and it kind of sounds like this piece is going to end, but it just gets a little slower, a little quieter. And then at 98, we pick back up again with the same little jaunty melody from before. So it's still in the same key, but now we've got bassoon and clarinet being featured again with a little bit of the upper woodwinds, one tuba playing, one little trumpet, like interjections, but they're not the focal point. At 110, we get to have everybody join back in again.
And it's more of that accompaniment where Katie was talking earlier about putting a little bit of space, a little sliver of daylight. We are coming up to measure 114 where we go back to the original key now.
Yep.
So we're back to the key of E flat like we were at the beginning.
Back like measure four.
And yes.
It's done a recap.
And we have these little punctuations again of the one and one, two, and with xylophone and some of the other things popping in between on those rests. So again, just a restatement of what we had earlier in the piece. And that's really kind of how this goes to the end. It really is just a recap of what we had at the beginning. This, I envision, Katie and I talked about it sounding almost like movie music. Like you could totally see it, you know, like the title sequence to a movie with, you know, your main character just skipping, walking their dogs,
talked about it when I played it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the kids like it because again, it's very jaunty. It's not the most fun piece for like percussion necessarily, but it would be a fun like little interlude of a piece on, if you're programming for UIL, putting it in the middle. It features woodwinds heavily, plus you've got to have at least one or two good, really solid trumpets. But the function of the low brass though is not as melodic. So if you have a little bit of a weaker section, then this would definitely like hide it a little bit. But I think woodwinds are definitely shine in this piece.
Yes, for sure.
So this is a good one for that.
And like Katie said, percussion parts are limited. So, you know, if this would be something that I would pair with something that's a little bit more intriguing for your percussion section, because they're not going to have a whole lot to latch onto in this. But their parts, the parts that are there are important, and you need to make sure that they're, you know, the kids are solid on it. A lot of that upbeat stuff.
The end is very cute though. It's a little different from the beginning. It thins out again after Laura said it's kind of the same as the beginning, which it is. At 150, we get our last little moment of and one and two, and then, and that's in piccolo, and then flute and oboe have and one and two, and they kind of keep it going for a second. Then bassoon and clarinet have and one and two, and so it's like a little echoing of the melody. The last little moment of melody is in the tuba. Mm-hmm. It's a tuba solo.
It's so cute.
It's cute. So it goes like low reed, like tenor sax, and then tuba, and then everybody two. One. And it's just like really quiet and cute at the very end. Like you imagine like a little twinkle on their little toe or something, you know, like it's very cute. And I, if your kids like hearing stuff that sounds movie-esque, it's not super difficult. Like I said, the hardest rhythm is the one and a two and basically in the whole piece. There are some grace notes in the woodwinds, but that's probably the hardest technique.
And just in articulation, being able to move your fingers in time and do the articulation stylistically correctly.
Lots of accents because of the style. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we hope that you will consider programming A Walk in the Morning Sun with your group. It's just such a fun little piece, and I think there's something in it for everybody.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Band BFFs.